This is an exclusive excerpt from the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Childbirth has been a matter of magic, mystery, and misunderstanding ever since Eve got the ball rolling. Whether the result of medical ignorance, social stigma, or some faddish new technique, for most of human history, this critical moment of every life was shrouded in secrecy, the domain of doctors, very often to the detriment of the health of the mother, the child, or both. Dr. Randy Hutter Epstein is the author of Get Me Out, A History of Childbirth from the Garden of Eden to the Sperm Bank. Dr. Epstein joins us on the line right now from New York. Hi, Randy.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for being on the program with us. It's a very interesting topic. As I mentioned in the introduction, it's something that literally involves all of us, yet we seem to know so little about it. Why is that, first of all?
Well, we are learning. We, meaning doctors, have learned a lot more than we used to know in the last thousands of years. But I think what's fascinated me is not just studying the evolution of what we've learned and the evolution of all the folklore with it, but how much we still don't know. As much as we know, we can see, or we can, scientists can study receptors on sperm and see how they use it like a GPS to navigate down the vaginal canal, and yet we don't know why this sperm and not that one gets into the egg. There are still so many mysteries we don't know about how to create a human.
I'm sure you must get some pushback from people who say, you know, this has worked for years without anyone delving into the reasons or understanding why. Why the push to get all this information?
Well, I think, there's always that curiosity. And I think ever since, I mean, I write in the book that Eve was probably the first person, the only person ever on the planet that went through childbirth without any advice at all, because she didn't have a mother, as far as we know. She didn't have sisters telling her what to do. She didn't have a doctor. So ever since then, we've all just tried to figure out, not just to try to manufacture what we consider designer babies now, but really how to make healthy babies, how to keep women healthy and alive during childbirth. I mean, that was a big issue hundreds of years ago. Being pregnant was a lot riskier in the 1800s than it is now. And so a lot of the push to understand isn't the push to how to make our babies perfect, but how to keep women alive, how to keep the babies alive, how to keep us all healthy. So the more we know about the basic science of both pregnant women and forming babies, the more we can keep our mothers and future children healthy.
So who is it you're trying to reach most with this book, the general population or people in your medical profession?
Really both. I mean, it's aimed for a general population, so I don't think anybody has to have any basic biology at all to read the book. But I am hoping, and I've gotten wonderful feedback from physicians who read the book and had no idea about the history. So, for instance, I have a chapter on sperm banks. I visited a sperm bank, and I'm sure a lot of doctors in the field of reproduction know a lot about the science of sperm banking, but they may not know that the whole idea of artificial insemination really was mentioned by a doctor way back in 1867. Now, it didn't take off in 1867, and people were horrified when this doctor said, hey, I bet one day in the future we might be able to help some women become pregnant by taking sperm and somehow getting it into them without going through the natural route. It was considered a horrific idea back in 1867, so much so that when he wrote it in a book, the British Medical Journal thought it was obscene for them even to review the book. So I'm hoping that a general audience will learn something about the process of childbirth, what goes on, but it's really more a history and a cultural look about how we make decisions.
Do you think, I mean, we've been giving birth since the beginning of time, do
Yes.
you think that though the medical profession has learned more and more and more about the process of conception and giving birth, that as a population as a whole, the non-medical part of the population, that we seem to know less about childbirth than maybe even some of our forefathers did?
No, I think actually we do know a lot more. I mean, one of the things that's funny, in the before the 1950s, some of the reason why people didn't know is they were squeamish to talk about it. So some of the first people, some women that promoted natural childbirth in the 40s and 50s and 60s really weren't promoting so much anti-drug, what we think of as natural childbirth, but they were promoting let's get educated, and they were trying to get advice to the general audience. So I think that there has been this more recent history of people wanting to know more about the process, and with doctors sharing more information, wanting to educate people.
Now, in going through the history with your book, you've learned some of the more, shall we say, bizarre ways or crazy ways that people have tried to conceive going back to the Middle Ages?
Mm-hmm. I certainly have. And I guess some of the wackiest the wackiest thing I found isn't so much the Middle Ages, but around the 1800s. I think the thing that shocked me the most was something called do-it-yourself forceps. It was made by Italian researchers. It was a fad that fortunately never took off, but the reason why I write about it is what it says about the culture. So in the 1800s, men really weren't welcomed into the birthing room. It was considered kind of obscene. And when they did come in, there would be this sheet over a woman, a tent, and they kind of put their hands under it and deliver a baby without looking. Sometimes they even used forceps without looking, which is a pretty scary thought. The do-it-yourself forceps was, it looks like these weird pulleys with a forcep in you, and I guess the point was, hey, you can deliver your own baby and you don't have to be embarrassed of having a man walk in the room. So that was probably one of the wackier things that never took off but was invented.
I actually saw the illustration of that particular item that was sent to me, and yeah, it kind of shocked me too.
Yeah.
And
some of the other things, I think a lot of what we think of as childbirth history really does talk about the culture of the time, and that's a big theme in the book. So, for instance, in colonial times in America, when a woman's job was get married, get pregnant, make babies, and then do it again, not get married again, but keep making babies. The thinking was in the medical profession that you had to stay in bed for a long time, and you did. You stayed in bed for about a month, and your girlfriends came around and helped you, and you did the same for them when you weren't pregnant, when you hadn't just given birth. And then you flash forward to the 1970s when women, and 80s when women needed to get back to work, and then doctors said, it's healthy for you to get out of bed. Was there science that showed when to get out of bed? No, we've never had those scientific studies, but it's really a cultural change.
I was about to say, I guess part of the reasoning behind the idea of a woman getting pregnant and then perpetually staying pregnant, basically, was in partly due to a high infancy mortality rate.
Exactly, yes. I mean, there was a much higher infant mortality rate in those days, and there was a higher, as we know, maternal mortality. I mean, if you go back to the early days and before we understood germs, doctors in hospitals in the beginning of the 1900s, when women, poor women, were first going into hospitals to give birth, your doctor could deliver a baby, then maybe go to the morgue and do an autopsy, and then maybe go back and deliver another baby, not washing his hands in the middle. And there was just, it was a germ fest. And a lot of women died, and the infection spread among babies too.
In certain parts of society, it still seems to be a squeamish thing to talk about. Your book called Get Me Out, A History of Childbirth from the Garden of Eden to the Sperm Bank. Do you think your book should be something that perhaps should be in high schools?
Sure, it could be. I think it'd be wonderful if high school students read it. I think there's nothing in it that's more, that goes any deeper than children are already learning about sexuality and what they can learn. And I do think it's important, even in high school, for students to understand the importance of science and what we learn from science, and yet also the cultural influences and how science isn't in one domain and culture in another, but there's this mix of what we think is the right thing to do and then how we look at the scientific evidence.
Again, as I said, it's a fascinating topic for a book. The book is called Get Me Out, A History of Childbirth from the Garden of Eden to the Sperm Bank. It's written by Dr. Epstein, Dr. Randy Hutter Epstein. Thank you very, very much, Randy, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me. I really appreciate it.
Dr. Randy Hutter Epstein, author of Get Me Out, A History of Childbirth from the Garden of Eden to the Sperm Bank. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0418, and you'll find links to Randy's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly.
You've just heard an exclusive excerpt from the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. To hear any or all of the full hour-long shows, visit thestufffile.com. Stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's thestufffile.com. A presentation of Flying Fish Communications.